Hello, friends. It's time for the News Talk 94.9 WSJM Morning Announcements with yours truly, Jim Gifford, and my partner in crime, Spencer Rivers. Brought to you by the good people at Special Light Indicator in Benton Harbor. And there is a good chance that you have walked through a special light door when you go into a local restaurant or visit a school or a store or walk into a manufacturing plant. So thank you to Special Light Indicator in Benton Harbor and enjoy your morning announcements.
Roll out those lazy, hazy, crazy days of summer. Those days of soda and pretzels and beer. Roll off the sun and moon and sing a song of cheer.
Yeah, it was hazy out there yesterday, Spence, and it looks like that's going to stay that way for a while.
I think so.
Yesterday when we were talking about, or when I was asking you if the sun was up, because I couldn't tell. It was, in fact, and someone then sent me a picture, says, hey, yeah, the sun's up. But it was hard to tell because it was so hazy yesterday, and we have the Western wildfires to thank for that. It's all smoke from the 80, almost 90 wildfires that are burning out in 10 western states, according to the National Interagency Fire Center. And guess what? That's going to be around for a while. There apparently is a relatively thick layer of smoke up 15 to 30,000 feet in the air, and it's here and more of it's coming. It kind of looks like clouds because it's up so high, but it is, in fact, smoke, and that's filtering out the light here and just made it look kind of alien-like yesterday.
Can we have anything else going on? Got the pandemic, wildfires, got hurricanes coming. I mean, geez.
Yeah, I know. Next couple of days, they say this could get even thicker here to the point where it'll just gonna look like a cloudy day. But for the most part, it will be smoke with the areas out west continuing to burn. We will get apparently occasionally smoky skies over the next couple of weeks.
Oh, boy.
So we got that to look forward to. Now, our commander-in-chief was out west visiting Northern California for a look at the wildfires out there that have ravaged that state and others. Last time I checked, the death toll was at 24. His thoughts and or comments while he was out there yesterday.
When trees fall down after a short period of time, about 18 months, they become very dry. They become really like a matchstick. When you have years of leaves, dried leaves on the ground, it just sets it up. It's really a fuel for a fire.
Basically, what he was saying there, he was hanging the blame for this on the states themselves and how they have handled forest management out there. Now, the other side of that coin says, nope, that ain't it. It's climate change. And my question is, why can't it be both?
Yeah.
In fact, I think, if I remember hearing right, California's Governor Newsom kind of acknowledged that that they could or could be doing a better job of forest management out that way. But he also pointed out that if, you know, the federal government is hanging the whole thing on the governors and the states, he says, hey, now, wait a minute, 58% of the forest land in California is owned by the federal government. Only 3% is owned by the state, and the rest of it's privately owned. So before you start pointing fingers, you know, let's have a meeting and figure out what can be done as opposed to who's at fault. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if anything comes out of that. I don't know. I don't think, from what I've seen, the weather is going to be cooperating all that much out there to help them out. It's too bad we can't channel the likes of all the storms that are blowing up in the Gulf and send them out west.
Oh, yeah, that would, yeah.
For good drenching rain out on the west coast there, because, boy, could they use it. All right, what else do we know here this morning? Page one of your morning announcements. What was I going to do here? Oh, hang on a second. What did I do with that one? Oh, I'll get to that in a minute. I'm just going to talk to myself for a while here.
Okay? Oh, okay. That's fine.
You can go ahead and nod off. I'll set the alarm, wake you up when it's time for you to jump in. You mentioned this morning, a big meeting with the St. Joe City Commission last night where they've decided there will be no Black Lives Matter murals painted out in front of the high school there. They instead are turning it back to the students there to engage the students who organized the petition in favor of the mural to work with develop something, some sort of a message that falls within the legal parameters of the city of St. Joe. So while that sounds like kind of legalese, I guess they're going to see if they can do something else, not feeling comfortable with the notion of painting a Black Lives mural banner on the street in front of St. Joe High School there, fearing apparently that if they do that, then others are going to demand the same and so on and so forth. The other thing that the community is concerned about is the anti-police and anti-political graffiti painted down at the South Pier at Silver Beach. I guess at this point, we don't know when it's going to get cleaned up, right? Because it has to come from the Army Corps of Engineers, because they own it. So that's disturbing to the community. And they're apparently at this point perusing video camera stuff from the area to see if they can. They figure it was done Saturday night between 11 p.m. and 8 a.m. or something like that on Sunday morning. And so they're looking at surveillance videos and, from that area to see if they can find who might have done that. Also, Lakeshore High School has Lakeshore Schools have had to go into their COVID protocol as a student there came down with tested positive for COVID. They've got five others in quarantine there, so their COVID protocols are kicking in. And at this point, the parents all know about it, and we just move forward on that front. So beyond that, what I was going to share with you a moment ago was, remember yesterday we were talking about our sports, early sports fan memories? Coming up as kids, both of us in the Cleveland area, Indians fans, Browns fans. I got a real nice note from our friend Carol Olson, who said she heard us talking about that. Listen to this, as she recounted some of her early childhood sports memories. She said, my grandparents lived in Milwaukee when I was growing up, so I became a Braves fan, went to several games each summer. Warren Spahn. Their ace lefty lived near her grandparents, and she said she walked over to his house and rang the doorbell one day in search of an autograph. Mrs. Spahn came to the door, said, yeah, Warren's out back barbecuing. Just go on out there. So she went in the backyard and said he willingly autographed her book and spent several minutes chatting with her.
Oh, how nice is that?
So cool is that? So... she said her grandfather took her to the Players Gate at the stadium, so she's got all kinds of autographs. I don't know if she still has them, but Hank Aaron, Joe Torre, Eddie Matthews, Felipe Alou, a bunch of others.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
So, yeah, just hanging out in the backyard with Warren Spahn. Who else can claim that in their childhood memories? That's pretty neat.
So, anyway. Ken Harrelson lived in the same apartment building as my mother did for a while. I was in the elevator with him once.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you touch him? Ask him for an autograph?
No, I didn't bother him.
Did you know who he was at the time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Ken the Hawk Harrelson. Mm-hmm. That's right. Most everybody associates him with the White Sox because of the booth work that he did over the years. Mm-hmm. He was a Cleveland Indian back in the day. All right, here on the home front, we have an effort in front of us, apparently, to do something about reclaiming some of our history and some of the memories that many in Southwest Michigan share, and that is the memory of going to Deer Forest. Now, you brought this to my attention. Where did this come from? A gentleman who's trying to purchase and restore Deer Forest?
Yeah, Blair Struble on the Facebook page. There's a couple of Deer Forest Facebook pages that I didn't know were there. And He is starting a GoFundMe page. In fact, it's up now. It's GoFundMe.com/F/DeerForestPurchase. And he's trying to raise $1 million to, restore and add some interesting things to Deer Forest, which would be very, very welcome, I would think.
Yeah, from what I understand in reading what you sent me here or handed me was that he wants to... Restore the opening of the park.
Right.
Have some sort of a museum as you come in. Bring back the deer, but also have some like event center, a wedding venue type thing.
Yeah,
back
sort of
in
the
there.
Back of the property.
Place for parties and picnics and that sort of thing.
I'd like to get the train back going again.
Yeah.
I forgot about the train.
I guess he's assuming that we will be done with COVID at some point. So
yeah. Well, because this would take a long time to get that. I've driven Pat back there probably about a month or so ago, and it is... There are some structures there, but all of them need to either be rebuilt or repaired.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's kind of sad looking now, considering how many times I used to go there.
Mm-hmm. So his name is Blair Struble.
He's from Coloma.
And what's the GoFundMe thing again?
It is, GoFundMe.com/F/DeerForestPurchaseAmp Restoration. But if you just go to... any of the Deer Forest pages on Facebook, there are links to that. Right. Yeah.
So what's next? Save Berrien Hills? That's sad driving past that.
Action territory.
Just to see how that's all weeded up and gone by the wayside.
Well, this just got started, so he's got $255 at the GoFundMe page $1 million goal, but again, this just started.
Does he say on there what the purchase price of the property is?
No.
Okay.
He didn't say that.
All right.
But he did a walkthrough with the realtor and stuff, so good luck to that, and I hope that happens.
All right.
I really do. I don't know what the neighbors around there would think about it, but...
All right, then. You can get out and feed the deer, ride the ponies.
Were you ever there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't remember if you were or not.
We took the kids when they were little. My little one at the time was very little. She almost succumbed to the over-aggressive and hungry deer. Because you stand there and you've got that little ice cream cone full of deer pellets or feed or whatever it is.
There was a neat place. They had a Ferris wheel there and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. I don't remember... how much was left, and by the time we got it there, it was pretty late in its in its career, if you will, in its life. And I don't remember it being much of an amusement park, but mainly a deer park.
I remember, we had some relatives. They had a camel there you could ride on. I remember one of the kids riding on a camel.
Feed the deer, ride the camel.
And Ferris wheel wasn't one of those real big ones. It was a small one, mostly for kids. And they had birds that were flying around that would land on your shoulder and stuff. It was pretty cool. It really was.
Peacocks and that kind of stuff, too?
Yeah, and when you went there, you could get a plastic key. I think it was in the shape of an elephant, if I remember right.
Oh, yeah.
And you could plug it in, and it would tell you what you were looking at and stuff.
Yeah. A lot of zoos did that back in that era. Because I remember way back when they even had that at the Cleveland Zoo when I still lived there. It's 6:24 on News Talk Sports 94.9 WSJM. Straight ahead in page two of your morning announcements, we'll be talking about unemployment offices and why they're closed and taking guns into the state capitol and all kinds of big fun stuff. Page two of your morning announcements straight ahead on News Talk Sports 94.9 WSJM. Gonna be another hazy day today.
Everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty.
Nothing has changed from the 60s. Page two from your morning announcements. But first, this reminder, or perhaps if you hadn't heard up till now, and wouldn't be a reminder. But nonetheless, the MoodyOnTheMarket.com 15 Under 15 Awards are now accepting nominations for the class of 2020. So if you know of a local small business with 15 employees or less in Berrien, Cass, or Van Buren counties that are doing amazing things, nominate them right now. Right now at MoodyOnTheMarket.com. Just click 15 under 15. Brought to you by McGee's Heating and Air Conditioning in the Southwest Michigan Regional Chamber with support from the United Way of Southwest Michigan and the Mason Jar Cafe. Local small businesses need your support now more than ever. So help us find and award these very deserving places. Send the nominations to do it at MoodyOnTheMarket.com and do it before Sunday, October 4th. Got it? Good. All right. Page two of your morning announcements. Where do we start on this round here? A little bit from the what the hell file. Apparently, watching the parade of constituents who've gone without unemployment insurance payments for far too long, being hampered by the closing of offices across the state, Southwest Michigan State Rep. Beth Griffin demanding that the governor open the offices of the Unemployment Insurance Agency. I didn't know they were still closed. Did you?
No, I didn't.
I've not had to access their services, so I wasn't aware of that. But she says it is necessary that the workers speak directly with unemployment reps about the payments they have been promised. She's reporting dozens of displaced workers in her communities and hundreds across the state that have gone without their unemployment insurance payments or even any kind of a callback from the agency for more than 7 months. And that's going to be disheartening.
Oh, boy.
Disheartening, if not, dangerous if you don't have any cash coming in to, pay for groceries and that sort of thing. So hopefully she'll get some action on that and they can get that resolved. Here's some good news, I guess, for the open carry crowd. The Michigan Capital Commissioners failed to pass two proposals before them to ban or limit weapons at the state capitol yesterday, which means guns continue to be allowed inside the building. Armed protesters, if you will remember, entered the Capitol during a demonstration against the governor's coronavirus shutdowns back in April. Since then, the commission, charged with overseeing the Capitol grounds, has grappled with whether they should act, and apparently they've decided they should not. So while I guess that passes the Second Amendment test, I'm not so sure it passes the common sense
test.
It does
not.
So we'll see where that goes from here. They just kind of said, all right, well, we're not going to do anything about it. So at this point, for whatever reason you feel, and this applies to long guns as well, for whatever reason you feel the need to carry one of those into the state capitol building, you are still allowed to. So weird world we live in, Spencer.
You want to hear a weird story? World. A short weird story?
I just told you one.
Okay, you want to hear one from Canada?
Could Canada be any weirder than us?
Yes. Someone broke into a house in Ontario, Canada.
That is weird.
Over the weekend, didn't steal anything, but did defecate in the dishwasher. The cops are trying to track them down.
Oh, dear Lord. I don't have that cycle on my dishwasher. I have normal high heat, just rinse. I don't have the poop cycle. To the best of my knowledge.
Why would anyone do that? I don't understand.
I wonder if drugs or alcohol were involved. God, I hope they've got video of that and they can find out who did it. It'd be really funny if it turned out to be somebody in the family.
Oh, yeah.
Just messing around.
Or someone that worked for Cascade or something.
Oh, God. Or the local dishwasher repairman. He's out drumming up business. I don't know what happens. Every time I wash the dishes, they smell like crap. Oh, God. Well, I guess Canadians are as weird as we are.
Well, why'd you break into somebody's house and do that? What is the possible?
Think about what's going on in that guy's head as he's performing that act. This is a good idea. Hey! Better. This is going to be swell.
Yeah, put that on the pots and pans setting, I think.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Oh, my God. Well, anyway, what else have we got here? Morning announcements include some COVID news that should be of interest to parents with school-age kids. Yesterday, in an effort to provide accurate and timely information about COVID in Michigan schools, the Department of Health and Human Services started reporting outbreak information school by school, being collected from 45 local health departments across the state on a weekly basis. It was supposed to start yesterday. COVID outbreak, as you may remember from previous discussions here, defined as two or more cases with a link by place and time indicating a shared exposure outside of your household there. So they're suggesting here that parents and students should know that if their school is listed, that their local health department and school are already involved and investigating. And based on that investigation, people are contacted individually, as we heard earlier. This has already happened at Lakeshore. If they were exposed, you got one person at Lakeshore who tested positive. Five were put in quarantine because of close proximity. And as I understand, that the definition of close proximity is basically you have to be close to that person like within 6 feet and for more than 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So just, you know, walking by him in the hallway doesn't count.
Oh, okay. So,
for the record, now it said they were starting this yesterday. I tried and went to the website, the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and tried to find a link or some way to go and find this information. I could not. I came up empty. I couldn't figure out where, if, or how it's actually listed. Maybe they just started collecting the data yesterday. I'm not sure.
I see. Okay.
But it said they were going to put it up every Monday, I think. But it was not, I couldn't find it yesterday. So a little more, this Michigan on the COVID situation here. I don't know whether you had heard this yet. We may have had it in the news. Michigan launching a new campaign to encourage mask wearing using data from a July survey that showed 72% of us say we always wear a mask in public. You're one of the 72%.
Yeah,
you know,
I do. Yeah.
As I am as well. Although I have forgotten a couple of times, had to turn around and go back and get it.
That's happened to me.
And I actually had one time where I walked into Meijer and I the mask that I had, the thing broke. And so I didn't have it. I kind of, this was early on, right after the mandate started, particularly for grocery stores. And I kind of stuck my head in and apologetically asked if anybody had a mask. And luckily, somebody did right there. And
nice.
So, yeah. Good
well,
for
they
them.
Knew who you were. So
they did not.
Okay.
This campaign now from the state of Michigan is called Spread Hope, Not COVID. TV ads, radio ads, billboards, social media videos. $5 million worth of that stuff.
Wow.
Paid for by the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act. Boy, they come up with long names for this stuff, don't they? Let's see if that translates into anything. C-A-R-E-S-A. No, it's the CARES Act.
Yeah, the CARES Act.
How about that?
Isn't that something?
Is there a branch of the government that comes up with these things? There must be. Anyway, the CARES Act, funded by Congress. The campaign message is, it's the virus taking away Michiganders' freedoms, not politicians. They're trying to get, they're trying to divest us of our notion that all of this is a political scam and that this is just being done to deprive us of our freedoms for political gain in some way, shape, or form. So they want you to follow precautions like masking and social distancing to help the state return to normal faster. And I don't know why we continue to think that we can do this state by state. Okay, so what happens if Michigan fixes it? So then what? If Indiana's still a mess, so now do we put up, a blockade at the border to keep Indianians out? Do we now become like Canada and deny entrance or exits? This whole state-by-state thing makes no sense to me. I heard over Chicago radio yesterday talking about quarantining people from Wisconsin because they've got a spike of cases up there. So if you're from Wisconsin, you can't come to Chicago. This is nuts. This is nuts. Leadership, people. Anyway, let's get off the COVID thing for a minute, shall we?
Yeah.
I saw this article yesterday, and I just found this fascinating. We've talked periodically about the continuing movement toward more and more electric vehicles and the new technology that's being developed to make that happen, and how the big three and others kind of pushed along or led along by the likes of Tesla are seemingly all in on some eventual complete conversion to electric vehicles. Well, I saw this article yesterday from General Motors about their new GMC Hummer electric pickup. They're going to reveal that next month, October 20, and start taking orders at that time. They showed a short video the other day, and this new electric Hummer has four-corner steering in what they call crab mode.
Oh, my wife accuses me of being in that.
This, I think, might be a little different than what she's talking about. What do you, walk backwards and snap at things?
Just snap at things.
So this, as far as vehicularly speaking, crab mode would enable this Hummer electric vehicle's four-wheel steering capability and allow it to move diagonally.
Oh, wow.
You will be able to turn the wheels enough that you can, like, kind of diagonally scoot into a parking space.
That would be neat.
I know. And if they, if they're going to do that, eventually I would think that they'll get to a point where they can just do, you know, right angle type of stuff, too. This is diagonal at the moment, but my goodness.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd like a new Hummer with crab mode, please. Is that all you can eat? No, it's not. Man. And to wrap up page two of your morning announcements, a little bit of a COVID distraction here. The gang at MLive.com have decided to do one more search this year. Now, they have gone across the state of Michigan several times looking for the best burger or the best pizza and that sort of thing. Now they're doing Michigan's best donut. So they need nominees to determine a list of finalists, and that's where you come in. You need to send an email if you know of a place that is deserving of this sort of an honor and tell them the name of your favorite donut shop, address, or at least what city it's in. And then these people are going to go around the state and to do the check-in on this. You put Michigan's best donut in the subject line and email it to Gonzo, G-O-N-Z-O, at MLive.com. And I would highly recommend that for our little corner of the world, you do that on behalf of Red Coach Donuts. Because they make good donuts. Or if there's somebody else in the area that you have in mind. But Gonzo at MLive.com and put Michigan's best donut in the subject line. And then make your nomination there. So, all right, let's get that done. All right, that's page two of your morning announcements.